Hey everyone, and welcome to Chef AJ Live. I'm your host, Chef AJ, and this is where I introduce you to amazing people like you who are doing great things in the world that I think you should know about. Well, today is the fourth Monday of the month, which means it's time for Goodbye Lupus with Dr. Brooke Goldner, and she has some incredible research she wants to share with you about processed foods. It's worse than we thought. They can cause, well, even death. She's going to explain. Please welcome her back to the show. That's amazing. Where did you find this research?
Well, I'm always on the lookout for new information that's coming out, and I actually saw some news hits talking about processed foods. Now, let me look. I don't like to just read what CNN said. I want to read the actual research and see what was going on. And it really is. It's worse than we thought, which is I feel kind of incredulous even saying that because we already know how bad it is. But yeah, I shared a video about it on my Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and it's being watched a lot, which is good. But it really is. It's two different studies that came out of right now, one on 10 million people and one on 10,000. So it's not like it's just a small study, few people. They're really big studies, and one of them was looking at how it affects our mortality, and the other one was about how it affects our brain in terms of working tasks, dementia, and even addiction. So it was really cool to see them side by side and see what in real time the things we're eating and also even the amounts it took to make differences. So even though I've already made a long video about that I'm online, I want to make sure everybody is hearing about this because I think it also helps it in terms of motivation, right? We've
Who did
talked
the
about
study? Who did
So we
the
have
study?
there's a couple different ones. So let me pull up all my stuff here because I don't
Because
want
that's a
to.
lot of people in the study.
Yes. So the one on the brain was in JAMA Neurology, where they looked at 10,000 Brazilians for 10 years.
10 years. That's wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. So when they do those prospective studies and they're trying to see what's going to happen over time as they watch people. And let me pull up the other one here because I want to make sure that I have the
It's
right.
amazing they could get people to respond for 10 years. While she's looking for the studies, if you just joined us, because I know Instagram always starts late, with Dr. Brooke Goldner. And by the way, she has a wonderful new book, guys. It's called Goodbye Lupus, Hello Delicious, with easy, delicious recipes and photos. And today we're talking about processed food. It's worse than you thought.
It's worse than you thought. Yeah, so I wanted to make sure. Okay, and then the other one was the UK in Lancet Discovery Science. So they're good sources, and you can't argue with. I mean, even 10,000 is a lot. 10 million. Okay, let's see what they're doing. So one of the things that I found surprising, at least I think other people find surprising, is how they defined it. So they were talking about what they call ultra processed food. So there's fresh food, right? The food that like you take an apple, you bite into it. Fresh, whole, right? People like to talk about whole food, plant-based. I would say it doesn't mean that you're shopping at Whole Foods, all right, but that you're eating something intact in its whole form, right? Having a smoothie, right? You're eating it in its whole form, you're drinking up every bit of it, right? Versus having a juice, which is actually processed in turn. They use something called the NOVA classification to talk about processed versus ultra processed. So processed means you took something and you changed it, you took a part of it. So when you juice, it's a process. When you make olive into olive oil is a process. Even making tofu is a process, but they weren't talking about any kind of negative effects from those kind of processes. And actually, some of those things are perfectly fine. You want to have some fresh pressed juice, that's perfectly fine. You want to have flax oil, that's great. It's actually concentrated, but or tofu, right? But ultra processed, what they're talking about there is they said it's from, and I'm going to read it, says it's made from extracting parts of foods and processing, frying, adding chemicals, adding flavor enhancers, adding preservatives, and they typically are high in fat, high in sugar, low to no fiber. They have also got manufactured ingredients, and they have a long shelf life. So some of the stuff I think we all would go, yeah, of course that's processed, like candy. All right, fine, right? Frozen pizza, donuts, ice cream, but even French fries and cookies, soda, energy drinks. I think we all would go, okay, yeah, I recognize processed. But they also listed canned soups, instant soups, yogurts. Now, of course, we don't eat dairy, you and me. But a lot of people think when they're eating yogurt, they're eating something that's not processed or healthy. And they said any of the flavored yogurts are ultra processed and contribute to this. Juices, this is store-bought juices, not you have a fresh pressed juice. Margarine, a lot of people who like to tell me they're plant-based are actually eating a lot of ultra processed stuff. So margarine, of course, any of the processed plant foods, but also people don't even think about frozen meat, chicken nuggets, breakfast cereals. I have so many people who are like, well, you've said Ezekiel bread is fine. So how about Ezekiel cereal? I said, they lost me. Ezekiel bread will mold if you leave it on your counter for one day. Ezekiel cereal has a really long shelf life. That is now ultra processed. Protein bars, cereal bars, meal replacement shakes. And what I was really glad to see they posted, infant formula. Now, infant formula, and actually most baby foods are the most processed stuff on the market. I remember when I had my Solomon, I was looking at what was in baby foods. I said, this is worse than anything I would ever eat. I would never eat any of these ingredients. And even, you know, infant formula, the first ingredients is usually high fructose corn syrup. And that's what's given to babies, right? So they're processed and they're full of sugar and they're really unhealthy. So the list was really extensive. And I think a lot of people eat that stuff every day. I know when I post on Instagram, people are going, well, what about this brand of canned soup? This brand of canned soup. So it's got preservatives in it. It goes in the category. So there was a lot of pushback because I think a lot of people out there don't think they're eating processed and they're eating some of these items. So there's a long list. If you want, I can give you some links to these if people want to read it afterwards and see what the list was. I thought it was pretty extensive. So let's look at what happened, right? The first study was a review of 45 different meta-analyses of 10 million people. And what they were looking at is what happens if you have 10% of your diet come from ultra processed food, just 10%. So that's usually like one serving. Okay. And what they found is that one serving, that 10% of your diet comes from that ultra processed list. They found a 50% increase in dying from heart disease, 50. 50%. That's enormous, right? Now we're looking at the same kind of stuff we see in meat, which I'll talk about in a second, right? So 50% increased risk of dying from heart disease, which includes heart attacks, strokes, peripheral artery disease. And again, 10%, one serving. Also increased the risk of, and this was a study that was done just on all diseases. It found that it increased people's risk of anxiety by 53%.
Wow.
So that's huge. That's huge, right? And the risk of early death from any cause, an early death from any cause, 20%. All right. So again, that's from 10% of your calories coming from these things is increase your whole risk of dying early, 20%, increased risk of anxiety, 53%, increased risk of heart disease, 50%. So that is really devastating. Now, at the same time, I see another studies popping up in JAMA Neurology and looking at Brazilians, 10,000 Brazilians for 10 years. And they're looking specifically at brain function and ultra processed food. So the same stuff that I was just talking about. And what they found is two servings a day, 20% of your diet comes from ultra processed foods, just 20%. They found it increased your risk of dementia by 20%. Okay. And here's the kicker, all right? There's more data, but I just want people to think about this. So 10% of your diet, you're looking at increased risk of heart disease, 50%, anxiety, 53%, increased risk of dying, 20%. And if you have 20% of your diet, you're increasing your risk of dementia by 20%. All of those things. AJ, what do you think the average American or person in the UK, how much of their diet typically comes from ultra-processed foods?
Okay, I'm going to guess 70%.
You're probably right for a lot of folks, but they said the typical is 50.
Okay, but that's still half their diet. That's a lot.
Well, considering that 10% of the diet caused the increased risk of death by 20% or heart disease for 50%, it's terrifying, right? When I read that, I actually felt my anxiety go up and I don't eat the ultra processed stuff, right? So that was really terrifying to think about. You know, they're looking at Brazilians that are eating, you know, maybe 20% of their diet from this stuff and they're getting more dementia from it. And they're looking at these other studies where people are getting 10% of their diet and their risk of dying from heart disease goes up 50%. And most Americans are doing 50% of that, or UK 50%. Like I said, Canada is just under that. The other stuff they were looking at with the brain was very interesting. They found that people who ate ultra processed foods, and again, this was 20% of the diet, they had a 25% faster rate of decline in their executive function, their ability to do tasks, basically. That's the neurology term for being able to do basic tasks. 25% faster rate of decline than other people who didn't eat that stuff. That is really, really significant. They had an increased rate of overall cognitive impairment by 28% compared with people who ate the least amount of processed foods. And for the brain, I mean, we need that. That is the scariest thing, right? Is to be able to lose your ability to think and remember and do basic tasks. And just again, 20% of the diet coming from that, less than half of what most Americans consumed, even people who say they're vegan or plant-based, consume a lot of processed foods. When I first became plant-based, they didn't have all these vegan products. We had unsweetened, we had almond milk and really bad like meat alternatives, but there was no cheese, there was no mayo, there was no butter, all that stuff didn't exist. So you were kind of forced to be healthy. Nowadays, I see people all the time. I saw a guy recently who said, I eat a very healthy plant-based diet. He's eating Burger King Impossible Burgers. And he thought it was healthy, you know? And I'm like, it's a better choice if you're going to be a Burger King than the meat, but it's not healthy, you know? The other thing that I thought was a cool twist. So all of you guys who follow me, or you follow the things AJ tells you, there was a cool twist when it came to cognitive decline. And what it was, is that if the overall diet was high in fresh fruits and vegetables, the association between the ultra processed foods and the cognitive decline disappeared. So for those of us who eat mostly fresh fruits and vegetables and do have the occasional Impossible Burger or the occasional fries when you go to a restaurant and that's the vegan item on the menu, that they don't see the same connection with the early dementia. So that's good news, that eating large amounts of the good stuff that I've been telling you to eat will at least mitigate that one thing. But it is really important that people pay attention to that area. Now, the other thing they looked at, which was really, really important for all the people who just beat themselves up over eating the wrong things. And AJ, you and I have talked about food addiction a lot. And I actually just posted a video, I tagged you in it, where we had talked about it before, because I thought it was such an important conversation, where you said a lot of folks won't say that addiction is real when it comes to food. And first of all, that's nonsense. And you know that. And I know a lot of people who follow you know that, but what they did was they were doing PET scans, looking at the brain, at the areas that light up when they just show someone the label of their favorite, the snack food or junk food or ultra processed food they tend to eat, or the fast food place they like. And just seeing the label, the areas of the brain that show anticipation in a drug addict light up, and the jonesing craving area basically of the brain. So they see it, and all of a sudden, all they can do is think about how much they want it. At same way that an alcoholic, especially if someone who's just in recovery, when they see alcohol, suddenly they're moving towards it without even thinking about it. And so the areas of the brain that are involved in addiction and anticipation of your favorite thing you're addicted to, both of those areas of the brain light up heavily when people just see that label. And I was just looking at something the other day about how cigarette companies actually bought up a lot of the brands of the processed food. So they already know how to get us addicted, right? But it is a really important thing that everybody understand is it's not your fault that you're addicted to it. You know, we all grew up in an environment where we were told these things were convenient and they were healthy. You know, and even doctors would say, yeah, sure. Yeah. Give your kid this processed baby food as their first food. I refused to do that. My kid's first food was avocado, but, we were raised this way, and we have to overcome those addictions in order to get our health back. But these studies, I think, are really important in helping you understand that it is as bad as your addiction to cigarettes would have been, or to alcohol, or to other drugs. It is killing you, and it's killing you rapidly. And whether it's, and the number one cause of death is still heart disease, but we've been blaming meat alone for a long time. And so, you know, when I sat and thought about it, I went, what's the average American eating? They're eating meat and processed foods together, right? Burger and fries. So now you've increased your risk of death from heart disease by 100%. I mean, this is, you're guaranteeing it. And so those are also highly addictive as well. But, you know, I started saying this, I'm going to post it, that, you know, the Western diet is ultra addictive, ultra processed, and ultra deadly. That's what it is. And so we have to battle those addictions in order to get ourselves well, but it's time to stop telling ourselves that it's not a problem. And I think the studies are extremely, extremely important in helping people understand that, that all we've been seeing over and over again in studies in all areas, you know, I've talked before about the study they did at Crick Institute in England, where they were talking about how over the past 40 years, autoimmune diseases rising and spreading throughout the world in places that never existed before, exactly mimicking the rise and spread of the Western diet. It's a tidal wave, but as soon as people try it, they abandon their old diet for this one because it's so addictive. So I thought all in all those different areas, brain function, addiction, and overall risk of death, I think all of those are really important that we bring that to people. And also how little of the diet has to come from those things, those ultra processed items, in order to actually have those negative things happen. I actually thought it was surprising how little it took to have such terrible, terrible outcomes in people.
Do you think that people are going to change from these studies, though? Because, I mean, think about it. I mean, people did change a little bit with smoking when they realized it caused cancer and other things. But food, I mean, you don't have to smoke. You don't have to drink, but you have to eat. And processed food is just so insidious in our culture. I mean, they serve it to you in a hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And your doctor used to walk in smoking a cigarette, too, right? And a plane, you couldn't get away from it. There was a smoking area of the restaurant. And if there was no non-smoking tables left, you were stuck at a smoking table, right? So it is. And unfortunately, because it's been treated not as a drug, like everyone knew that, you know, smoking was something added, although there were times when they were saying it was healthy. they tried it, but it has been just introduced as food. I always put my finger quotes around it, food, because it's not, it's food-like and food-like drugs. I've said that a long time. But it is, I think it's going to take time. And I think for doctors to embrace it, we need more of this to come forward. I will definitely keep bringing that forward, especially when I've testified to the Dietary Guidelines Committee. I had a video go viral because I beseeched them to listen. I don't know. I just wanted to shake them up, listen to me. But, you know, even with the Dietary Guidelines Committee, the majority of the testimony comes from industry. And so I think the more of these things come out, the more likely they are to listen. But, you know, we knew in the 50s that smoking caused cancer and Congress didn't act till like the 80s. So in the meantime, that's our mission, right, Jeff? I mean, we're just trying to bring it to the public. And thankfully, I do get to teach doctors, but they have to be looking for this info. That's why, like, at least this one about dementia was in, you know, JAMA Neurology, pretty mainstream. So I have a new case series that got published that was in the third most downloaded research journal, because I want it to be mainstream. I waited until we could get something more mainstream, because a lot of times the people who publish anything to do with nutrition, it gets buried somewhere where doctors aren't going to read it. They're not reading nutrition journals, but these are more mainstream. And so I'm hoping that it's going to get some more buzz. And again, doctors have to also take the time to recommend it. And I think that's one thing that really handicaps doctors, is at least in the US, people who use their insurance to see a doctor, they often are given maybe 10 to 15 minutes, and doctors basically have to read a lab, talk to you for 5 minutes, write a prescription, but they don't even really feel like they have time for that. They have to restructure their whole practice to try to have that time. And it's a difficult thing to do. I've never worked with insurance companies because I thought it was outrageous that they thought I should be able to diagnose and treat people in 10 minutes. So you can barely have your opening breaking the ice. You know, who's going to trust me with their life story in that short a period of time? So I've always eschewed that. I mean, even when I worked for a nonprofit, it was one where I could go anywhere in the community and meet with people as long as I wanted to, and as long as I thought they needed me. And, you know, someone had anxiety, I'd meet them at their house. I'd go with them. You know, I took people for the first time to a place to order their own food for the first time and held their hand next to them and helped them through it. Like, I've always wanted to just be there where people needed me most, and the limitations, it's difficult. So while there are people who can afford to pay out of pocket for medical care, majority of people, they see their doctors a very short period of time. But I think as these studies come out more and more, at least maybe it'll be in the paperwork. You know, you fill out the paperwork, do you smoke or not? And then they give you like a printout to take home. They can do something, but this is part of it. And I think these prospective studies are going to make a difference. It just might take time the way it did with smoking, but it does involve really you know, you bring up a great point, like really overhauling the way we treat food, especially in places like schools. I mean, like my kids have never been able to buy school lunch. They have had to bring their own food since they were in elementary. Well, even, you know, in preschool. And I remember, you know, in preschool, I used to feel emotionally sad. Like I would feel sad that I would bring my Solomon to preschool and he would have a bag full of, you know, grapes and apples and beans and tofu and, you know, vegetables and all this stuff. He'd have a cup of smoothie with him to drink throughout the day. And then I'd bring him to drop him off and they would have morning snack during drop off. And these little 2-year-olds are all eating gummy bears and processed junk. And it just broke my heart. I mean, I physically felt like I wanted to cry walking in there, seeing them eating this terrible junk. And then they would say, oh, well, we have snack time, but we take turns providing it. And it's veggie straws, you know, the fried potato chips that pretend to be vegetables and stuff like that. I said, my kid doesn't eat that. So I'd always have to send his own snacks. And it's so, you know, the schools, hospitals, everywhere, everything has to be revamped. And I think it's going to be a lot of money and investment, but if we make it where it's impossible to ignore, eventually it's going to have to happen. But it is a really big, big ordeal. And that's why we have to convince people one at a time with the public. That's why we do this, right?
But processed food is so insidious. You know, when you compare it to smoking, even when smoking was in fashion, people like didn't smoke, you know, maybe they did smoke at school, not at school. Well, not kids for sure, but processed food, like you say, it's in the schools, it's in the hospitals, it's at Petco, it's at Joann's Fabric. It's people are going to say, but it's affordable. I can't afford to eat plants, you know?
Yeah, it is horrific. And I think that there'll have to be some changes even in subsidies, right? Our government still subsidizes the stuff that does not need to be subsidized. If they stopped subsidizing dairy, a carton of milk would be somewhere around, someone told me once, it'd be like $15 to $20. That would easily get everyone to convert over to the almond milk, right? I mean, that would just be, whoa, that's expensive. They're subsidizing meat and eggs and then also like corn and soy. What about broccoli and kale and all these other things that we need, right? So I think, but then you're hitting into all the people who, you know, have power in those industries, and we have to change government and who can take money or gifts and all this. I mean, it is a complete overhaul, and it involves an ethical and moral overhaul as well. So yeah, I think it's going to be a project, but I've never been intimidated by something being an obstacle. I'm relentless. And I think that's what we have to be as health advocates. I mean, I almost died so many times, and I had to take just horrendous amounts of medicines for so much of my life being sick with lupus. I mean, years of chemotherapy and high dose steroids and all the stuff that could have killed me to try to save my kidneys. And nobody knew that it was the macaroni and cheese that I had for lunch the day before and the pizza we had for dinner that was causing it. I mean, my kidney doctor told me to drink Gatorade after chemo to get rehydrated, ultra processed. So it's just, and my kidney doctor also told me that pizza was the perfect food because it had the food groups in it, all the food groups, you know? So I didn't know. And there's so many people out there who are suffering and dying or losing people they love because they don't have this info. So yeah, it's hard. It's hard to push through all of this. There is so much red tape. So we have physical addiction. We have all the money in those industries. We have a government that doesn't really work for the people and protecting us. It's a lot, but I just have this belief deep inside myself that the truth and good always win. I don't know. It's just something I just feel it in myself that if we keep talking and we keep teaching that the truth will come out. And in some generations to come, this will be the normal. And they'll go, what? People used to eat animals, you know, just the way my kids can't imagine, like people not having Wi-Fi or people smoking, right? That, you know, there will be an evolution as long as we keep fighting for it. But people do need to understand that it's going to be difficult. And that, you know, I was listening to my husband coaching today. He coaches people as well who are trying to lose weight, get healthy, all that stuff. And I heard him talking to this woman and I heard him saying, you know, listen, it's going to suck for a while. You're going to be in a bad mood. You are so addicted to this stuff, sweet tea and meat and dairy and every meal. Warn your husband, you're going to be in such a bad mood. And it was, you know, and she was laughing, but it's the real thing. You're going to go through complete withdrawal and cravings, But that's the short period. But you will get past those when you stick with it. And then you don't have to worry about suffering and dying from things that are entirely preventable. You know, that it's a, I always say that they're different hard. It's hard to be sick, but being sick only gets harder over time. It's hard to give up stuff you're addicted to, but it's only hard at first. And then it becomes normal and easy, you know, and then you even start to enjoy it and like what it does for you. But it's going to be hard. But what do? We have to still keep educating people. And I'm glad that they're still doing these kind of studies where we can just keep overlaying them over and over and over again until there's just no avoiding it anymore. And we can save lives. And in the meantime, we save lives by talking about it.
Well, it's just that it's so normalized. Like yesterday we had a vegan meetup, and I mean, there really was very little what I would call processed food there. Maybe there was some bread and crackers, but overall it was healthy food. Have you ever like gone or spoken at a veg fest?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
Yeah. There's nothing to eat there. Have you noticed? Nothing we can eat.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I call that recreational eating, right? So eating to get high, and that's what it is. It is purely eating to get high. But the goal of a veg fest is to get people to try eating something vegan and seduce them over, right? So if someone has never eaten anything vegan and they think it all tastes like sandpaper, well, here's a fried chicken sandwich, right? And here's a Philly cheesesteak and all this stuff that's all made of plants. So it's kind of like a really, you know, a switchover. And you know, that study that they actually popularized on Netflix where they looked at the twins, even the twins that were the vegan, they had the vegan twins and then the ones that are still eating meat, but you know, less fattening pieces and still adding more vegetables. So they also got healthier. The ones that were on the plant-based diet, they were still giving them vegan meat and they still had an improvement in all their blood markers. So there's kind of, you know, it's not like everybody who is currently fairly healthy or not that sick yet, that they can't kind of move over towards it. And I still believe that if you're not super sick, we can do the crowd out method. You know, the study that they looked at for cognitive decline or dementia, that if your diet's mostly fruits and vegetables, that you stop getting that same cognitive decline that they saw with people who didn't eat that. So it's like, okay, if we're eating well most of the time, then we can prevent some of the negative effects, right? So for me, I mean, I've been lupus free and healthy for almost 19 years now. So if I go to veg fest, I will eat something junky. Why not? You know, I'll taste it. But I can tell you, as much as my taste buds are like, wow, that's fun, afterwards, my energy level is not the same. My stomach's bloated, and I'm actually looking forward to getting a salad or smoothie later. So I'm not afraid of the occasional junky vegan thing because I know that the majority of the time I'm eating really well and I have the health to prove it. So I think it's okay to have those things in your diet as you're working to get healthier. But I do think, one, the study can help people understand, you know, how unhealthy their diet actually is, because most do not. I had a friend like that. She was always talking about how a healthier diet is, and it's not, it is all processed vegan. It is not healthy. And oil, you know, everything's cooked in oil. And it's like, you're not healthy. You know, and she never knew why she couldn't lose weight. You know, she's like, you're just lucky that you're thin. It doesn't work for me. I'm like, I'm drinking smoothies all day. I'm having a big salad for dinner with some chickpeas on top. I'm not eating all that oil and junk, you know, but yes, if we go out somewhere on the weekend, then maybe I'll have something, a glass of wine or something that has sugar in it or a vegan thing. But my body kind of rejects it. After I have it, I'm like, okay, I want to go back to my healthy stuff. But I'm not afraid of it. So yeah, I mean, it's, if I don't feel like it, I won't have that stuff. But I think it's okay once in a while. It's just people lie to themselves about how often they're doing it. And it's having an effect on people's health. But I think still the first step is, let's crowd it out. Let's make sure that we have our smoothies, our salads, our fresh, healthy foods. And if you do eat something that's processed, bring your awareness to it. You know, like if it is a canned soup and it says vegan, but there's preservatives in it, that is ultra processed. That has to be added to your recreational amount. It's kind of like, you know what it made me think of just now? My husband is very systemized and organized person. And so when we met, he wanted to organize our spending, you know, because I was an intern. I was making less literally than someone who was working as a waiter. working crazy hours, you know, so I had no income. He had to help me pay my rent. A studio in LA cost almost double what I was spending for a two-story house in Pittsburgh, right? So he was helping me out. He goes, we need to figure out your spending. And so we literally, he had me write down everything that I spent money on, everything. And, you know, from haircuts to whatever products, everything. And then we figured out what is actually necessary and what's not. And I actually had no idea how much money I was spending that really I didn't need to until it was in front of me. And I think it'd be cool to do a food audit the same way, to say, you know what am I actually eating on a daily basis? And what is it? How much of the good stuff? How much of the other stuff? Is it 10% of my diet? Is it 20% of my diet that's coming from ultra processed? If it is, that's having an effect. I see that all the time in my rapid recovery programs, where people tell me, I joined your group because I've been doing it all on my own and it's not working. And I just don't know why. So I want you to watch me. And then in the first 2 days, they go, whoa, okay, no, I've been lying to myself. I have not been doing this. I've definitely not finished it on some days, eaten off plan a lot of other days. But once they start journaling it and showing us every day, suddenly it's very clear. So I think it's good if you want to go through, anyone who's watching, and look at your, look, open up your pantry, open up your fridge. Let's get honest about what's in there and make sure that you are really eating fresh whole foods as much as possible. And that that stuff is actually less than 10% of your diet. Because as I said, even 10% of the diet raise people's risks of dying by 20%. I mean, that's enormous, you know?
Wow. You know, most people aren't vegan or plant-based. And so when they were doing these studies, these people probably were also eating a lot of animal products. And so how
Brazilians. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So how did they know that that wasn't also contributing?
Because that was the same. They made sure that the difference was the amount of process.
Some
Brazilians that are eating, they're all eating the meat, and some are eating meat and veggies, and some are eating meat and veggies and processed and fried, right? So they were keeping those variables the same. But bringing in the meat is very important, because that's the other part, right? Because, you know, there was a study done, this was back over 10 years ago, where it was almost 30,000 people, where they found one daily serving of red meat increased risk of death by 13%, one serving. How many servings a day do most people eat? Most people have it with every meal. And if the meat was processed, raise your risk of death by 20%. One meal a day, right? But if you're going to McDonald's for breakfast and sometimes for dinner, that's more, right? So, you know, there was a comment that I loved from a Harvard News article that I actually talked about in my video on Friday, where somebody commented, and I thought it was so good, that after reading the results of all these studies, that healthy meat consumption has become an oxymoron. Right. So I thought that was a great line. But when you combine the two, that most people are, as you said, eating meat every day and eating processed every day, it explains everything about what's happening in our society. You know, I have said this before, that in medical school, I was in medical school 20 years ago, that I have watched things change, where diseases that only happened in adults 20 years ago, only adults, are now common in 6-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, heart disease, diabetes, autoimmune diseases. These are now common in children, cancers, and as well as mental health issues, more anxiety, more depression, more psychosis, more attention deficit. And it's all explained here, right? Because we are starting them off, the most processed diets are in children. There is a place we go to. This is one of my recreational foods. Most people think they're eating healthy when they go there. I know for me, this is recreational eating. There's a place where they do ramen, right? But they have a vegan soup where they make it creamy with cashew cream. But I know there's some oil in it. But it's soup, right? Okay, it's soup. So everyone can eat soup. Babies can eat soup. You know, well, not babies, but, you know, kids that are eating can eat soup. Adults can eat soup. So they have all these different kinds of soup. And of course, a lot of them have meat, and they have some vegetable soups. But the kid's meal is fried chicken, candy, and soda. Why is it that the kid's meal, the one who's just forming their cells, their nervous system, those are the ones who are eating fried chicken and candy? It gets me so upset. I can't look. Right? The parents are eating vegetable soup and the kid's eating fried chicken and candy with a soda. So we're poisoning our children. I'm saying we collectively, I didn't, but people are poisoning and they don't realize it. Oh, it's a kid's meal. So we're raising these little addicts, these junkies, and their first thing they ever eat is processed rice cereal, baby food, all these dried chemical preservative filled ultra processed stuff. And then people come to me where they're 2-year-olds in kidney failure, but all they'll eat is chicken nuggets. Well, that's your fault, because you gave it to them. You didn't know better. I don't believe anyone intentionally poisons their children. That's just not a thing, right? People want their children to be okay and they don't realize it. But if there's any one thing that can motivate people to get this crap out of their house, I hope it's their children. You know, my kids were raw their first year of life because I wanted them to never suffer a day of what I ever had, right? That if it cured me, well, then let's just make sure you never get that, right? So of course I'm far more aware, but I think it's really important. I think that'll be one of my next big videos, is really talking about how this is impacting our children, because it's disgusting how these industries are just working to get our kids to become these addicts. And physicians don't know better. They're like, yeah, baby food, sure, go ahead. Finger food, yeah, that seems right. Processed cereal for finger food, sure. So it is a problem. We are addicted from babies, from our first foods, some from infant formula. And so, yeah, it is a big, big thing to overhaul, but I don't want people to feel overwhelmed or hopeless, because if Chef AJ can get off that stuff, and if I can get off that stuff, you know, I feel like Rocky at the end of Rocky IV. If I can change and you can change, everyone can change. Adrian, right? Like, we can all do it. We can do this and we can do it together, but we have to keep it in front of our awareness. I'm addicted to that. And we also have to tell people when they say, why aren't you eating that? I'm trying to eat cleaner. I'm trying to be healthier. Stop being ashamed of being healthy. You know, like, it's okay. And start bringing, you know, you, and if someone wants to know more, you can say, you know, there's some really cool studies I just read. You should check out this video, or you should, you know, that we can be a part of that change instead of kind of, I meet so many people who are kind of ashamed to let people know what they're doing. Be proud of it. Be proud of it, because you can save lives just by taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Okay. So if it is an addiction, how do we get people unaddicted, especially when they're living in houses, usually with other family members that are equally addicted that don't necessarily want to change?
Yeah, it is a process. I mean, this is why, you know, I talk about how insurance companies want doctors to meet people for 10 minutes. My appointment's 75 minutes. You know, we have to sit and go through all the different issues. So some people are blessed enough, and I think we all should be, where their partner supports them and wants them to do well, and we'll do it with them. I have people who do rapid recovery with me for reversing their diseases, and their spouse or partner does it with them just in support. So I think that's really good. But I also know that's not the reality for a lot of people. So then it just becomes about communication. So number one, a lot of people who feel unsupported are not really communicating their needs. You know, I have so many, especially moms, a lot of people who get autoimmune diseases, you know, come to me, are women. And they feel like they have to keep making their husband and or partner and kids the same stuff that they like, while they then try to get themselves healthy. And so they're smelling it, they're tasting it, and they can't get over their addiction. So one thing I always remind them of is, when you're doing the right thing for you, it's right for everyone else, even if they don't like it. You know, it's not like your kids need this. It's not like your partner needs this. So one, you could just tell the family, listen, I learned better and I'm going to do better for this family, because now I know the truth, right? My parents gave up smoking, not because of the warnings that came out about cancer for themselves. It's when secondhand smoke warnings came out and they realized they could have hurt me. So they immediately quit once they learned about secondhand smoke, right? So sometimes it can be more motivating to say, you know what? I know I need this, but I also need to make sure that I'm not doing anything that makes my kid sicker. Number two, you have to have a discussion in your home that, listen, I'm addicted to this stuff, which means if I see it, I'm going to consume it. I can't have it around the house. So how do you deal with that? Again, I always tell people, if you're the one doing the shopping, don't buy it. If they complain there's only fruit to eat, oh well, right? But if you're not the one doing the shopping or people are not on board, then you need to have a family meeting about what are we going to do with it? So for example, I have one lady who said that she talked to her family and they got a box and she bought a lock for it and said, don't tell me the combination. And they put the junk stuff in there. So, okay, fine. So that's a solution for now, right? She said, after I get well, then I'll pressure them. Sometimes it feels too overwhelming to try to confront the whole family. Okay, but it needs to be a conversation. When I heard my husband coaching, I heard him saying, you know, that the person told him that my husband always gives me the sweet tea, you know, because he loves me and he thinks it's a treat. And I said, well, tell him there's a difference between enabling and love. What if it was cigarettes that you were addicted to? Would he give you more cigarettes because he loves you? We have to teach people what we need, and that involves communication. So a lot of the time I spend, I'll actually write out for people what they can, you know, just read the script so that you can teach people how to support you, because being supportive is not just saying way to go. It's trying to make sure that I don't slip and fall. And so, you know, there's someone in my group right now that we're helping with that, with this exact scenario of how to communicate with her family, because she's so addicted that if someone leaves cookies on the counter, she can't turn around and leave the kitchen, and she can't throw it in the trash. She has, as soon as she sees it, she eats it. She can't stop herself. So, you know, she wanted us to give her a solution that did not involve having to make anybody else uncomfortable. I said, no, you have to talk to your family. They need to be a part of saving you. And so it, you know, I recommend it's out of the house. They don't need it either. But if not, that you sit down with your family and say, this isn't okay. I need your help. I need your help. Let people be there for you. The same way as if you were an alcoholic, would people keep alcohol in the fridge because they like it? Or would the whole family decide no alcohol in the house? And if they have it, they have it out, right? It needs to be treated in that same way, which involves people being willing to be vulnerable and ask for help and communicate with their families. And I really think, I mean, I've always followed this, that, you know, we get that there's no junk in the house. If you want it, then you go out for it. But let the house be a safe place. Let it be a safe place. But it does involve a lot of communication. And with people who are really addicted, it does need to be out of sight, because they just can't. They can't get past it. You know, my husband always says, environment always wins. And it's the case. You know, eventually, just like with an alcoholic, they might be able to avoid their roommate's beer for a while. But on a bad day, it's going to call them and they're going to answer the call. That's just how it is when you have addiction. So it is, it's difficult. But once you get past it, it becomes easier. After a month off of your drug of choice, you're able to walk past it more easily and forget about it once you walk past it, you know, without it haunting you later. And as more months go by, then you stop thinking about it. And maybe when you see it, it kind of reminds you, and then you kind of walk away and it goes away again. And what I have found after years is now the stuff that I used to be addicted to actually repulses me. I get fight or flight from it. I just, you know, cheese for me was the most attractive. Now it grosses me out. But that took time and abstinence. And I think we also have to realize that for people who are, not everybody has severe food addiction. Not everyone has addictive personalities. But for people who really know that they have an addiction, if I see it, I'm going to eat it, then you have to treat it the same way you would treat drugs or alcohol, and abstain and get that support that you need to do it.
That's true. And, you know, it's funny that you said that, because my birthday was on Friday. So we had a big party, and look what somebody made for my birthday. Can you read this?
If it's in your house, it's in your mouth.
Yeah, look at this. It's like you can, it's a doorstop, it's a rock, it's beautiful. And I agree with that. The thing is even if somebody isn't addictive, it's still not healthy for them to have it as the majority of their calories. So if somebody was going to indulge, you said that even as little as 10%, that's not very much.
No, it's one serving a day. Yeah. You're saying.
And how did you differentiate processed food from ultra processed food?
So there's a scale called the Nova scale, where they actually list the different ingredients. Let me see if I can pull it up. So processed, you know, it doesn't mean that it's unhealthy. It just means it's not in original form. So there's something called the Nova food classification.
So you're probably talking about things like tofu, tempeh.
Exactly. Yeah. So let me see if I can share my screen and show you the Nova classification. Here we go. That's this one.
Oh, neat.
All right. So this was a classification system that they designed to do these epidemiological studies. So unprocessed, right, would be natural foods. And then they're also including meat and stuff. But they're saying things that are intact, right? Look, coffee. So group two is processed culinary ingredients. So extracted from natural foods or nature, with pressing, grinding, crushing, pulverizing, and refining. So they were not talking about these in this study. I'm not saying all of these are healthy. They just weren't talking about them in terms of ultra processed. So maple syrup and honey, starches like cornstarch, oils, butter, lard, coconut fat, even refined salt, salted butters, things like that. So, and this is, I don't know this website. This is Ecophysician. I don't know. They have a golden rule. Here we go. So that was oils, fats, and sugar. And then here's processed. So they're manufactured by industry with use of salt, sugar, oil, or other substances added to naturally or minimally processed foods. So now we're talking about canned beans, tomato ash extract, of course, some of the meat ingredients, coconut fat, stuff like that. So, and so there's kind of these little gradations of change, right? Versus this is what they were studying, this ultra processed. So if you look up NOVA classification, N-O-V-A, you can see that. So this is the stuff that they were studying that they found increased risk of death by 20% from any cause, or heart disease by 50%, increased dementia. So now we're talking about ice creams and frozen desserts, cookies, chocolates, sodas, energy drinks, dehydrated packaged sauces and seasonings, soups and mixed seasonings, sweetened yogurt, juices, all dairy drinks, including chocolate milk, margarines and spreads, some types of alcohol, infant formula, meal replacement shakes. So you see all that. Pastries, not the kind you make, chef. But so packaged breads, you know, that one gets a lot of people. They all want to tell me that they eat the healthy bread. The only one that I've seen not cause problems is the Ezekiel bread, but it's sprouted, cooked at a low temperature, and there's no preservatives in it. What about
the pacha bread? It's literally buckwheat, water, salt, and it's in the freezer section.
I haven't seen that one, but if that's the only ingredient, then it sounds like it wouldn't be on this list, right? It really, what they look at, I mean, what it says, again, it said it's made entirely or mostly from substances extracted from foods like oils, fats, sugar, starch, and proteins, or derived from food constituents, hydrogenated fats, modified starch, or synthesized in the laboratory from food substrates. That sounds fun, right? Flavor enhancers, colors, food additives, extrusion, molding, pre-processing by frying, beverages can be ultra-processed. So this is, and so basically what they're saying is these have no, you can't even trace it back anymore to the original food, or at least it doesn't have any of the benefits of the original food anymore. So that's what this specific, I'm not saying there aren't problems with the other categories, there are, but the fact that for people in the Western diet, about half of most people's diet comes from this category, the worst category, that's pretty scary when it comes to human health.
I wonder, do you think that they designed it because they knew it was going to be addictive, or they just got lucky, the processed food industry?
I think there's definitely some design behind it. Yeah. So even before these studies came out, they found there were other types of research being done by food scientists. So I'm trying to remember how long ago I read this. Probably about 15 years ago or so. Reading that when I was trying to understand more about foods and food addiction, that they had already come up with some formulas that they found that the most desired addictive, you know, kind of food combination was the combination of bread, meat, cheese, and tomatoes. That somehow that combo, and that's your cheeseburger, right? So that there's somehow that combo, when you take that steak and you put it on bread, and you add cheese and a tomato to it, it is now more addictive, or ketchup, really, a tomato product, right? That's now more addictive than it was if you just had the steak alone or just had the bread alone. So they had already started making those formulations a long time ago. Now we're just able to do the scans, right? We didn't always have access to the technology that we do now to be able to say, oh, look, here's a drug addict who's craving, you know, methamphetamine, and here is a food addict who is craving Taco Bell, and look at them, their brains look the same. So that's new to be able to see that in that same way now. But there are definitely food scientists, and I have a video on YouTube about this, food scientists whose job it is to try to figure out the most addictive formula of especially oil and salt and sugar. Those three ingredients really make people addicted to things. And so that, you know, you remember that potato chip plant, which one was it? It's, there's one of the potato chips that came in the can, and their slogan was, once you pop, you can't stop. Remember that one?
Oh my gosh. What? I do remember that. Yep.
Right. So once you pop, you can't stop. That was on purpose. They want that, you know, they want you, they want you to be addicted. And they made it into a catchy slogan, right? It was Pringles. So yeah, and now someone's triggered. Ooh, I like those. No, that's your addiction speaking. But that's literally, that is the job of the food scientists that work in the lab creating these synthetic substances, right? Because a potato chip is not even a cousin to a potato anymore, right? You know, potato's not gonna cause all these issues, right? No one's increasing their risk of dying from heart disease eating potatoes. No, the opposite, right? They're doing better. But potato chips, absolutely you are. So that's why it was driving me crazy where the kids were given these, you know, those veggie straws, and they make them orange and green. So, and the picture on the label is broccoli and carrots. And I look at it and it's so highly processed. It was more processed than the other regular potato chips that were just potatoes, salt, and oil. So, you know, they're always trying to fool you, but I really recommend people don't go down those aisles. I never go down the processed aisles. I just go into the produce section. I go into the dairy aisle to get my almond milk, you know, and then it's like, maybe I'll go down to pick up some beans, but that's really, there's not, my son Solomon only found out last year that there was a cookie aisle in a supermarket. He didn't know. He'd never seen it. And I was talking to someone about a cookie aisle, and he goes, there's an aisle of the supermarket for cookies? I said, yeah, a whole aisle. Didn't even know it existed because we don't go there. We just pick up our fresh food and we head on out. But for a lot of folks, they're going to get triggered just by walking down that aisle. Because all the, as I said, just seeing the label starts to increase all of your centers of your brain that start creating all those cravings. My mom was talking about that when she got cable TV put in, there was something she wanted to see. I don't know. And she hadn't seen commercials in a while. And she said, seeing commercials, even though she has been plant-based, she reversed her rheumatoid arthritis. Being plant-based and on my diet, right? On my Goodbye Lupus protocol. So she's been healthy and fit for a long time. And she said, it's amazing. Just seeing those commercials, I started feeling like I wanted to eat that stuff. And I noticed it in myself that it kind of created a craving. Like, ooh, you know, maybe I do want that. No, I don't. And that's years of not eating that way.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Let's tell people what you do every week, because we get so many questions for you, and they can get them answered by you often on your live that you do.
Yeah. And by the way, a lot of questions people ask me, I've been asked before. And so one of the things I try to do on my YouTube and Facebook and Instagram is if there's a question that I'm asked a lot that I get asked in a Q&A, I'll often just share a clip of me answering that question. Sometimes it's a question AJ asked me, and I'll share a clip of me answering that question so that you can find it. So if you have a certain question, I recommend you search my YouTube page, Goodbye Lupus, Brooklyn RMD, you can find it, and search it just to see if it's already answered, because there's a good chance that it was. But every week at 12:30 p.m. Pacific time, so that's 3:30 Eastern, I always do live Q&As for the public. So I stream it on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram at the same time. And I take questions. And every week, about 1,000 people shows up. And so I answer as many questions as I can. But I've met a lot of people. I was just at an event in Indianapolis. And people who come every week. And even if their question's not answered, they learn from all the other ones. And I always answer as many as I can and try to give people as much free support and coaching as I can. I really want to help the public as much as I can. So any time I can make a time and space to connect with them and teach them, I always do. So every Wednesday, for the most part, every once in a while, you might get a replay. Like recently there was one because my son had spring break, and so I was with him. But most of the time I am there on Wednesdays. And if I'm not, there'll be a replay or some other educational material for people.
What was your event in Indiana?
There was a nonprofit event to raise money for a woman's nonprofit called Run With Wine. And it's all of, it's a, it was designed for this woman, Anitra, came up with it as a way to teach people, women specifically, about healthy living. She went through living in a shelter after her divorce, and she wanted to help women in shelters learn self-care and good health and good eating. And she's had health issues where she had to also change her diet, and she's plant-based now too. So she wants to provide inspiration, education, self-care for women. And when women pay for it, they also pay for someone in the shelter to be able to get treatment for free. And so she created a black tie masquerade gala, which I've always wanted to go to, a masquerade gala, formal. Everybody looked gorgeous. There was Cirque du Soleil and everything. So she had me come as the keynote speaker while people were eating to try to inspire them to change their health. And it was the first time I've ever come on after a Cirque du Soleil act. It was very interesting. I felt like they needed to swing me in from the ceiling or something, but I was in heels, so I walked up. But it was a really beautiful event, and it was a very different event. I'm used to going to conferences, and that was definitely a cool thing. And yeah, so it was kind of a quick event. Yeah,
you had an event that sounded amazing. You spoke to a bunch of Kaiser doctors. How did that go?
Oh, it actually had to be postponed. Because so Kaiser Permanente had their annual wellness event where they were going to have 400 people had signed up to come over and to learn. And so I was their keynote speaker, but it was in a ski resort in California, in Tahoe, the weekend where they had the blizzard, the thunder blizzard. So 2 days before the event, they had to cancel because I don't know if you remember that, but there was it was extraordinary blizzard. And so everything got shut down. And so we have to wait and reschedule. I was really looking forward to that. I love being able to teach doctors. I want them to walk away and be able to bring that back with them. But hopefully that will be back on the books again soon.
I hope you got, they're so nice at Kaiser. So what's next for you? Do you have a program starting right now? We have everything in the show notes, how people can get your book, how they can get, you know.
Yes. And yeah. And my new recipe book, Good by Lupus, Hello Delicious. I mean, it's really, people have been really positive about it. So it's really, and one of the cool things about it is that there's a couple of things about it. Number one is every recipe in there was contributed by somebody who actually healed from their disease, or myself, or my son Alex, who wouldn't have existed without me healing my disease. So it is such a profoundly amazing book, I think, because literally everything in there that came from someone who healed, it's just, I really feel very excited by it and moved by it personally. All the people wanted to contribute. And also it's just different ways to eat the cruciferous vegetables and the omega-3s that I tell people to eat, but cruciferous lasagna, you know, asparagus pesto, you know, there's so many delicious and incredible ways to eat the same basic ingredients. So you don't have to be a chef, because I'm not a chef. I am not able to make complicated stuff, or at least not willing to do the work to learn. And so it's kind of these same basic ingredients that you can turn into all these incredible dishes. And so people have been really, really loving it. And I'm glad, because it took a while to put it together. And if it wasn't good, I think I would have been canceled because people were so excited about it, but it's been wonderful. So that's on Amazon, Goodbye Lupus, Hello Delicious. And that there's recipes from people who healed all sorts of diseases, from MS, scleroderma, Sjogren's, lupus, diabetes, all sorts of diseases. And I have my next 6-week rapid recovery group will be May 10th. So we're enrolling for that. And that's a program for people who are ready to get intense. If you like this hour of me with AJ, imagine this daily. That is the program where you download me into your brain and we watch you every day and make sure that you get results for your health as quickly as humanly possible. And that's my most popular program. So that we have one that's just now, they just finished their second week. So we're getting the second, between 2 and 3 weeks is when cravings spike. So this is the most important time for a lot of them, is right now. And we are breathing down their necks to just talk them through. We already had somebody relapse. We're like, it's okay. It's okay. Because if you relapse with someone there, you got your sponsor. What was your trigger? Let's talk about it. Let's get this done so that you don't get triggered again, right? Like, we're there to help. But my goal is to just, you know, for many people, they'd never get past the first month of it without our help because of the intensity of the addictions, you know, helping that person whose family kept leaving cookies on the counter. We're there to solve the problems with them so that they're not all by themselves trying to figure it out, because, you know, their brain is, they're whatever their best was is still them being sick. So we're really there to help them with every aspect of their lifestyle, their thoughts, all of that, to help them become more positive, more hopeful, and also more resilient. And also have better self-esteem, better boundaries. I help with everything. How many topics have we talked about? I'm there for all of it, you know, all of the different ways to help them actually get to the health that they want. So that's May 10th is my next one. And I do appointments, and my husband does appointments, and we do private rapid recovery for people who just want to talk to me privately every day for 4 weeks. So there's many ways for people who want to actually work with me to do that. It's at goodbyelupus.com. But I do recommend that you explore my all of my free and low cost things. I mean, I'm trying to make it so that everybody can heal without, you know, hopefully as many people as possible can heal without needing to pay anything for it. That's why I do all the free coaching that I can. But there are some people who really need or want that support, and I have it.
Nice. Thank you. And if you don't mind, people are asking for the study. So if later on, if you could send me the links, I'll
You know
add
what?
them.
They're all on my YouTube. Like the last
Okay.
video
I'll find them.
on Friday.
I will look for them. Okay. I
Yeah.
can
The
do that.
video I just posted on Friday because I haven't posted yet today. So literally the last video I posted on my YouTube and Instagram and Facebook all have the links with all the different studies that I talked about in the video. I talk about a deeper dive into all the other parts of it as well. And so there's all the links I talked about are there as well. So yeah.
I'll get them for you guys. Thanks, Dr. Goldner. This was great.
Yes, you're welcome. It's good to see you. I love the red. You look really good. I love
Thank
it.
You. I'm an Aries. They tell me I look good in red. I got this t-shirt for my.
Because it's the fire. It's the fire. And happy birthday.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And guys, get this book. It's wonderful. The recipes are easy and delicious, and they're unprocessed.
They're Oh, yes. 100%.
Absolutely.
Good to see you. Thanks, everybody, for coming.
Thanks so much for watching another episode of Chef AJ Live. Please come back tomorrow at 11 a.m. for our plant-based physical therapist, Eileen Kapsoftis. She's going to be talking about exercising away urinary incontinence. And thanks for all the great birthday wishes and gifts. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.